Yes, we have a quorum. We will call the meeting to order. Members, the first thing on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Benson moves the minutes. Further discussion? Hearing none, let's move to a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Members. Members, one of the, there have been several pretty significant reports coming from the Legislative Auditor's Office through the good work of the Legislative Audit Commission, if I do say so myself, having served on it for 6 years. You members actually suggested a program of work for the auditor's team to investigate different subjects for selection over the past few years. One of them was a study of governance in the Twin City area. And the audit team took that on and released that report. Friday, I think, was the original official release day, and the Legislative Audit Commission received the report that day. When the Audit Commission receives the report, members and members of the audience, there historically or traditionally is no room for public comment, just comment on the folks whose agencies or operations are being looked at. And the Audit Commission members, of which there are 12, can pepper the auditor with questions. Today, in this hearing, this is where the time we when we will take public testimony regarding the report. So what I'd like to sketch out for you is a roadmap for today's meeting. First, we will hear from the auditor, Mr. Jim Nobles, and his project manager, Judy Randall. They will present their the overview of the report that you have in front of you. And then there will be some responses from different agencies and interested groups. You see those listed on your agenda. And but before we get to that point, I think between point 4 and 5, we're going to take a little pause, and we're going to have members around this table ask questions. So if you'd like to take notes while they're talking, Jim, if you and Judy would approach the DOS there, we'll get this teed up and get started. I'm going to ask that we allow them to go through the report unless there's really a burning issue that you feel compelled that you need to talk about. Get my attention and we'll break in. And then we'll have time for member questions and answers before we get to the responses. And then those testifiers will also be standing for questions from this committee as well. Clear? Good deal. Mr. Nobles, welcome to the House Transportation Committee. If you'd do the usual for the tape, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And with me at the table is Judy Randall, who was the manager of the evaluation that we're going to be discussing today. And, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your preface to explain a little bit about the Legislative Audit Commission and the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Let me just add a couple of things. First, just to reinforce to everybody, this is a commission of the legislature that is bipartisan by law. And it operates that way, I think, most of the time. Mm-hmm. The chair of this committee is now the chair of the Legislative Audit Commission and previously served as the vice chair. And we also now have a Democrat from the Senate as vice chair. So it really operates both in its overall membership and in every other way, in a very bipartisan way. And as the chair indicated, they receive suggestions from you, from citizens, and a lot of other people every year for topics that people believe need to be evaluated. And those evaluations go significantly beyond traditional financial audits. We really get into issues of management, program effectiveness, and a lot of other important issues. I think it's also important to emphasize, though, that even though the process by which we receive those topics for evaluation comes through the legislature and ultimately are approved by the Legislative Audit Commission, the reports that are issued from the Office of the Legislative Auditor are solely the product of the office and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Legislative Audit Commission members. In fact, by the policy of the Legislative Audit Commission, members of the commission do not even see a copy of the report until it's released publicly. So, as I often say, if you disagree with some of our findings and recommendations, that's fine, because sometimes members of the Legislative Audit Commission also disagree. So what you have in front of you is a report from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And Mr. Chairman, if I can, I'd just like to mention that we are going to be releasing 3 additional reports during this legislative session, evaluation reports, and those will address non-emergency medical transportation, civil commitment of sex offenders, and environmental review and permitting. But if I could turn my attention now to the report that we have in front of us on governance of transit in the Twin Cities metropolitan region. When you give us these topics, and usually they're quite large, complicated, and challenging and interesting, we sit and we ponder for quite a while, what do we have here? And we go through a scoping process because we have a limited staff and a limited amount of time. And so we have to take these topics and scope them and develop a work plan that will deliver a report to you in a timely way. One of the things that we had to do with this topic is narrow it to governance of transit in the Twin Cities region. And I know that many of you are also concerned about transit in other parts of the state. And I know Representative Morrow in particular came to our roundtable because of his interest in transit in his community. And we would have liked to have included issues of transit elsewhere in this evaluation. But we decided that we really, to deliver the kind of evaluation that would give you the depth that we thought you would need, we limited the evaluation to transit in the Twin Cities. And so I apologize not only to Representative Morrow, but to the rest of you who are not from the Twin Cities. You are going to have to engage in a conversation that is very important to those who live and represent the metropolitan area, and it may introduce to you some concerns and issues and maybe even some terminology and some names that you're not quite familiar with, but we'll try to work through that. The other thing I would say in terms of scoping is that we had to look at the topic and that one word really stuck out, governance. What is governance? Well, governance can be about a lot of things, and you all participate and have participated over your careers in governance a lot, and undoubtedly you know that it involves people. People have a huge impact on governance. It involves process and policies. It also involves structure, and certainly the way we structure things in state government reflects a lot of different important concepts in terms of accountability, transparency, checks and balances, and a variety of concepts that we work in as we develop a structure and often embed it in the law or even in the Constitution. We decided that we were going to focus on structure. So this is not an evaluation of the performance of individuals. In fact, as we've said a number of times, we think individuals performed quite well. Our concern is with structure. And as you're going to hear and see in Ms. Randall's presentation, the structure for the governance of transit in the Twin Cities metropolitan region is complex and fragmented and has overlapping responsibilities among numerous organizations. The Metropolitan Council is, of course, at the center and heavily involved. But as you will hear, so are counties, both individually and collectively through various organizations. And then there are the cities that are also involved. And a concept and a term that you're going to hear quite a bit about, the opt-outs. We'll talk more about that in a while. But there are a number of so-called opt-out transit organizations that figure in to the organizational structure. Now, in some respects, this intense level of involvement across several layers of the government has helped move certain parts of the transit system forward. But in our view, this complexity and fragmentation and overlapping responsibility has also fostered distrust and conflict and made coordination and consensus building more difficult. Therefore, we think it is a good time to ask, is this the governance structure that will serve us well in the future? As the desire and need for even more transit becomes more apparent and grows, but resources shrink even further. We don't think this is an ideal structure. We think reform is needed. But we also acknowledge that it will not be easy to accomplish. You're going to hear through this conversation that issues about the Metropolitan Council and even governance of transit have been around a long time, and reform has been difficult to accomplish. But this, we think, is the time to take it on in a very serious way. And we think the place to start is with the Metropolitan Council. We start there because we think that is the root of the problem. The proliferation of transit organizations we have today in the Twin Cities, CTIB, you'll hear more about that acronym in just a moment. Again, the opt-outs, rail authorities, another acronym, TAB, that you'll learn about, and various other organizations. All of these reflect, in our view, a history of state and local elected officials working around the Metropolitan Council to advance certain parts of the region's transit system. Now, some people suggest that these workarounds that we've had over a number of years only represent temporary political situations. But we see the problem more deeply embedded in structure, and again, in the structure of the Metropolitan Council. For those of you who live here, but maybe even for those of you who do not, you know that the Metropolitan Council is a very important policy-making body. Its decisions, certainly its transit decisions, affect every local community in the region. Yet only appointees of the governor sit at the council's table. This governance structure has long been characterized by many as lacking accountability. We think it also undermines the Metropolitan Council's credibility, particularly among elected officials that represent communities that are impacted by council decisions. There are various ways the legislature could address concerns about the council's credibility and accountability. We discuss several possibilities in our report. Our preferred solution is to simply put some city and county elected officials from the region on the council. To tell you more about what we found and what we recommend, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I would like to now call on Judy Randall, a manager of our evaluation. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Nobles, for the overview. Members, let's call on Ms. Judy Randall, the project manager, to describe the project to us now. Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and I'm pleased to be here today to talk with you about our evaluation on the governance of transit in the region, Twin Cities region. Before I do that, though, I would like to acknowledge my colleagues seated behind me here, Emmy Bennett and Julie Trepke-Bastidas, for their work on the evaluation. Let me quickly give you an overview of what we're going to be talking about and what we looked at in this evaluation. We focused on certain types of transit, in particular regular route bus transit, which includes express and local bus routes, light rail transit, commuter rail, and bus rapid transit. We did not include dial-a-ride services or metro mobility. And also, just to give you a sense of the scope and scale, in 2009, transit operating costs in the region were about $319 million. This $319 million was funded by a variety of sources, including passenger fares, revenue raised through the motor vehicle sales tax, federal funds, state funds, et cetera. And in 2009, there were about 81 million riders. So that's just to give you a little bit of context here. When we looked at governance, as Mr. Nobles mentioned, we looked at planning transit ways, we looked at how bus services are coordinated, we looked at the performance of the transit services. And just to give you, you know, the highlights on the recommendations, Mr. Nobles already mentioned this one. Our key recommendation is that the legislature should restructure the Metropolitan Council. We also have a number of other recommendations in the report. In particular, pages 125 and 126 in your report list all of the recommendations. I'll highlight a couple here now. We recommend that the legislature extend the transit taxing district to include all municipalities in the Met Council's jurisdiction. We recommend that the legislature allow consideration of the Dan Patch Corridor, which is a potential commuter rail corridor that runs from Northfield to Minneapolis. And we recommend that the legislature clarify the goals and priorities of transit in the region. When we looked at the goals for transit in the region, we found they were scattered across a number of different statutes. They weren't prioritized. And this is kind of a common thread that's throughout the report and through our findings and recommendations, that these differing goals and lack of agreed upon priorities had impacts and contributed to some of the challenges. So again, these are just a few of the recommendations we make. Pages 125, 126 list all of them. I'm going to just step back now and talk a little bit more about our findings and how we got to make these recommendations. First, I'll start with the good news, which is that the region's transit system performs relatively well. we compared the Twin Cities transit system to 11 peer regions across the country, including Denver, Phoenix, Portland, and Seattle. And we compared them on a number of different measures. This again gets back to the point about there's not a clear set of priorities or goals for transit in the region. If there were a clear set of goals, we would be able to match up the performance measures to those goals and be able to really evaluate the system. But because there are a lot of goals, and again, the priorities aren't clear, we looked at as many different measures as we could to evaluate the performance of the system. I'll highlight a couple here, but again, there's a lot more in the report. Chapter 5 is dedicated to performance measures if you're interested in that aspect of the report. The first set of measures we looked at were efficiency measures. This includes things such as operating cost per passenger, fare recovery percentage, which is the percentage of the costs that are covered by passenger fares, subsidy per passenger, and subsidy per passenger mile. And here you can just see a quick kind of in a nutshell how we did compared to those 11 peer regions. You can see on operating cost per passenger, we ranked fourth among those peer regions. But on those other measures, fare recovery percentage, subsidy per passenger, et cetera, we ranked second. So again, we ranked relatively well. These are cost efficiency measures against those 11 peer regions. We also looked at performance on service use and access measures. Service use are things that measure, service use measures measure, given the amount of service provided, how much is it used? And again, we found that the Twin Cities region ranked relatively well, third and fourth on a number of these measures, such as passengers per revenue hour and per revenue mile. A couple things to point out, I think, on these performance slides. One, Twin Cities is ranking consistently well across all the different measures we looked at, so we found that encouraging. Secondly, you'll see that different regions perform better depending on what the measure is. And again, this gets back to the point of depending upon what the goals are, you would measure different things and you'll find different results. So we think it's important to use a comprehensive set of measures rather than just one or two performance measures to evaluate how the system is working. So that's a quick overview on the performance of the system. But as Mr. Nobles and as our title indicates, we were asked to look at the governance of transit. And there we found some challenges. In particular, we say the region's transit governance structure is far from ideal. And we thought the best way to show this and to illustrate this is to give you an idea, an overview of the governance entities involved in transit in the region. So first we'll start with the Metropolitan Council. They're the regional transit planning agency for the region. Within the Met Council is Metro Transit, which is the largest transit operator in the region. They operate the largest bus system. They also operate light rail, commuter rail. Within the council is also the Metropolitan Transportation Services, which provides a host of services, but in addition to those is the transit planning arm of the Met Council. Now, state statute has identified the Metropolitan Council as the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO for the region. Federal requirements require that the MPO have elected officials on the body. And since the Met Council, as you know and as Mr. Nobles mentioned, is made up of appointed members, the region has the Transportation Advisory Board, or TAB, which is made up of a majority of elected officials to help serve those MPO, those Metropolitan Planning Organization functions. So we have collectively, jointly, TAB and the Met Council serve as the MPO for the region. In addition, we have the county regional railroad authorities for the seven counties. They have the authority to levy taxes for rail projects, for planning, studying, and developing rail projects in the region. Then you also have the county boards of the seven counties in the metropolitan area. Now, the same county commissioners generally serve on both the regional railroad authority and the county board, but again, it's another organization that has decision-making authority and is involved in the governance of transit in the region. In 2008, the legislature authorized the county's Transit Improvement Board. The legislature authorized counties to be able to levy a quarter-cent sales tax that would go towards transit investment, and it enabled those counties who levied this tax to form a joint powers agreement that would then determine how to allocate those revenues, and that's where CTIB comes from. CTIB is made up of the five counties, oh good, it shows up in green, Washington, Anoka, Ramsey, Hennepin, and Dakota counties. Those five counties have chosen to levy the quarter cent sales tax in the region and are voting members on CTIB. Carver and Scott counties have chosen so far to not levy that quarter cent sales tax. They still participate in the meetings and they're non-voting members of CTIB. In red at the bottom, you have the 6 suburban transit providers. These are the providers that serve the 12 communities who opted out of the transit service provided by the regional transit system, currently Metro Transit. So in 1981, the legislature authorized certain communities to opt out of the regional transit system and to, using the property tax funds that were dedicated to transit at the time, to provide service in their areas. You have 12 communities in the south and west suburbs of the region who have chosen to opt out, and they are served by these 6 suburban transit providers: Shakopee Transit, Prior Lake Transit, Maple Grove Transit, Southwest Transit, Plymouth Metrolink, and the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. And then here at the bottom, I've listed 5 corridor commissions. Really, there's many, many more. If I had listed all of them, they would have taken up the whole slide, so I just listed a few of them. They are commissions, task force, alliances that are formed by communities, municipalities, interest groups that are along a certain corridor, and they have an interest in transportation or transit in that specific corridor. Now, you'll see there's no structure, there's no hierarchical structure on this slide. And in fact, it's more like a spider web, because each of these organizations has some autonomy and some independence, but they also then have some interdependence and overlapping with other organizations. So, for example, the suburban transit providers have autonomy in determining how the service in their region is going to be delivered and how much service is going to be delivered, but they have to comply with regional procedures and federal requirements, so there's some interdependence. Similarly, CTIB, the county's transit improvement board, has some independence in determining how to allocate the revenue it raises through the county quarter cent sales tax, but its spending decisions have to be consistent with the Metropolitan Council's transportation policy plan, its TPP. So again, we found independence and, you know, distinct roles for each of these organizations, but also overlapping and interdependence. So we found that this structure causes a number of challenges. The first one, not surprisingly and hopefully evident from the previous slide, is that there's a lot of fragmentation and it's really complex. Now, just because it's messy on paper doesn't mean it's not working, and complexity itself is not necessarily a bad thing if everybody can work well together, but we found, frankly, a lot of distrust among some of the transit organizations, particularly between the Metropolitan Council and the suburban transit providers. And those tense relationships make it more difficult, make the challenges from fragmentation and complexity all the more challenging. Because there are so many organizations, and again, with the strained relationships and the complexity, coordination is time-consuming. There's a lot of time and energy spent in working with and coordinating across and within these organizations. And finally, we found that there's not an agreed-upon set of priorities. Again, this kind of links back to the goals in law, and that the legislature hasn't set clear priorities for transit in the region. But then within the region, you've got lots of different organizations working at a local level with their own set of priorities. I think it's broadly acknowledged that all of these local organizations have done a lot to move transit, develop transit in the region. But each entity, probably not surprising, thinks that their local project is the most important. And there's not really an agreed-upon set of criteria in the region to evaluate all of those locally sponsored projects to determine which ones make the most sense for the region based on ridership projections and cost projections and things that are kind of hard data that are agreed upon. As we went out and spoke with people, there was a pretty widespread belief that the next project to be developed would be one that either was ready first or that had the most political capital behind it. Not necessarily, again, the one that was the best for the region based on ridership, cost projections, things like that. When we looked at these challenges and tried to get to what Mr. Nobles referred to as the root of the problem, we found that the composition of the Metropolitan Council itself has contributed to a number of the challenges. As you know, the members of the Metropolitan Council are appointed by the governor, and their terms are coterminous with the governor. So right now, as you know, Governor Dayton is in the process of filling the council members' seats. Because they're not directly elected, the council members have limited accountability to the public. The Metropolitan Council levies a tax in the transit taxing district, but again, the members are not, and the council is not directly accountable to the voters in the region. Similarly, we found that because of this structure, the council has limited credibility with the stakeholders and transit organizations in the region. Again, transit and a lot of the functions that the Met Council does, including wastewater and parks, are very local issues, and there's a lot of energy an organization put forth by local officials who are very hooked into their community, really understand the transit needs of their community. And there's widespread belief out there that the council members are not really as hooked into the community, don't necessarily have the expertise regarding transit, and again, are not accountable to the public. Instead, they're accountable back up to the governor who appointed them. Also, because of the governance structure and the composition of the council, there's limited stability. You know, as we just discussed, as I just said, the governor is in the process of renaming or naming all new members, or potentially all new members, to the council. So you have members who were there in the fall who likely won't be there now or, you know, coming up. And we heard from a number of people who were talking about initiatives that the council was starting in the fall. They were starting a Transitway Guidelines Initiative. And many people we spoke with said, you know, why are we putting energy into this now? Who knows what the next council is going to be interested in? A new council could come in and kind of throw the whole Transitway Guidelines Initiative out the window. So there's a lot of, I think, reluctance on the part of the transit organizations and the stakeholders we spoke with to really get behind some of the council initiatives when you have this limited stability and this potential for starting over every 4 or 8 years or every time there's a new governor. We also found the composition of the council itself contributes to the large number of transit organizations in the region. There are several examples, we feel, where the legislature has basically gone around the council and created a new organization. County's Transit Improvement Board, CTIB, being one example. Rather than giving the council the authority to levy the quarter-cent sales tax, or rather than the legislature levying that quarter-cent sales tax directly, the legislature went around the council and authorized the creation of CTIB and gave the counties that authority to levy that tax. Similarly, with the suburban transit providers, rather than kind of working with the regional transit provider at the time, the legislature kind of went around that body and authorized and allowed municipalities to opt out of that transit system and create their own. So all of this brings us to our main recommendation, which is that the legislature should restructure the Metropolitan Council. We acknowledge that restructuring the Metropolitan Council is not going to fix all of the complexity and all of the fragmentation that we've discussed, but we think it's the first step, and once that is in place, other changes can potentially be put in place. In the report, we walked through a number of different options for the council in terms of how it could be restructured, but ultimately we recommend a mix of appointed and elected members, all of whom serve staggered terms. We think it's important that there still be some appointed members to the council. We think that can help provide a regional view and take a regional perspective for transit and the other functions that the Metropolitan Council takes. But we think also having this mix of elected members will give the council more accountability, it will give it more credibility with the local officials, and the staggered terms will provide more stability. And then again, we think this is the first step, but we think it could potentially lead to more streamlined governance. Once the council's composition is restructured, it opens the door to potentially other changes to help simplify the governance of transit in the region. So I'll touch quickly on the other governance recommendations that we considered. The first is regarding the Transportation Advisory Board, TAB. As I mentioned previously, TAB is in place to meet the federal requirement to have elected officials be represented on the region's MPO. And if you have elected officials on the council, TAB could likely be eliminated and the council could serve as the region's solo MPO. We also considered recommending whether the legislature should eliminate CTIP, the County's Transit Improvement Board. Ultimately, we decided that, in our judgment, that as long as the counties are the ones levying the sales tax, then the counties should be responsible for allocating the sales tax. If the legislature chooses to move that taxing authority to the council, or if the legislature chooses to have them tax it directly, then you could eliminate CTIP. But as long as the counties are responsible for that tax, then the county should be responsible for allocating that money. We also looked into recommending whether Metro Transit and the Metropolitan Council should be separated. We heard concerns from many folks that the Metropolitan Council, as the region's planning agency, was had a conflict of interest and perhaps would plan in such a way as to favor Metro Transit. We weren't able to substantiate that, and in fact, we think there are some benefits to having those two organizations in the same agency. Additionally, the council has implemented some more procedures to improve consistency and transparency, and we think that That should help alleviate those concerns about the co-location of those agencies going forward. We also considered recommending whether to eliminate the suburban transit providers. I think if we were starting from scratch, we probably wouldn't have six suburban transit providers serving 7% of the bus riders in the region. But we're not starting from scratch. And the truth is that most of these providers have done a good job of serving their communities. So we ultimately did not recommend eliminating the suburban transit providers. However, we do recommend some consolidation among the providers. As I mentioned, there are six suburban transit providers right now. Four of them are city-run, so they're serving just mostly their own city. We recommend that some of them consolidate. In particular, we recommend that Maple Grove Transit and Plymouth Metrolink consider consolidating, and Shakopee Transit and Prior Lake Transit, we recommend that they consider consolidating. We think that those organizations themselves will find some efficiencies from consolidating, and at least on the margins, it would help to reduce the number of organizations involved in transit in the region. That's a relatively quick sum up of the governance recommendations. There are a number of other recommendations in the report. I'm going to touch on two quickly, but I'm happy to answer questions on any of them. First one is that the legislature should extend the transit taxing district to include all communities under the council's jurisdiction. Let me see, on page 66 in your report, you can see a map that shows the seven-county region and the Metropolitan Council's jurisdiction. And then the lighter shaded communities within the region are those that are subject to the regional transit capital levy. This levy goes to fund things like park and ride facilities and buses. It's used for capital purchases. And then you can see that the transit taxing district is a subset of the Met Council region. We recommend extending that transit taxing district to the whole council jurisdiction for a couple of reasons. First, the council already views as its service area that whole region. So it's already providing dial-a-ride services to that whole region if they're not served by regular route. Also, we found that Met Council has done some studies of the usage of their park and ride facilities, and they found that 10% of the users of the park and ride facilities live in that darker gray region where they're in the seven county metro region, but they're not in the transit taxing district. So they're already using those facilities that are paid for with that tax. And finally, the way the law is written, if a community is considering entering the transit taxing district, it has the ability to negotiate with the Met Council to obtain a certain level of service. It's not to say they'll get service that's unwarranted, but they will get kind of an extra look from that council to evaluate the transit services needed in that region. We think by extending the transit taxing district, you remove the ability for that negotiating, and then you also have people who are using the services being paying for it. So we think it's an equity issue. And then our second kind of other recommendation, just to highlight, is that the legislature should allow consideration of the Dam Patch Corridor. This is a potential commuter rail corridor that runs from Northfield to Minneapolis, and the reason why we mention it in our report is that the law is quite explicit in its prohibition of anybody to study, plan, consider, talk about anything this commuter rail line. We're not saying that the commuter rail line should be built. We're just saying that it should be able to be considered. You know, as we're expecting the region and stakeholders to work together and develop an agreed-upon set of priorities and think about planning transit ways based on ridership and cost projections, we think they should be able to study all potential corridors in the region and not be prohibited from looking at one in particular. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll end my comments. Happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. Members, while we're waiting for the list to build, I'm going to have one question for staff regarding page 66 on the transit taxing district. Could you give us a historical overview of what this district is, what it used to be used for, when we switched it to capital only from operating, and so on and so forth? Or would somebody from Met Council be better suited to do that? And Judd, I'm looking right at you. Do you have anybody here prepared to speak to the historical perspective of that, or Ms. Randall, or can you do that?
Mr. Chair, my guess is someone from the Met Council would do a better job than me. But
let me. You're going to be up next to do some presenting. Could you make that just a, or stand for the question whenever you have the podium? Thank you, members. Questions, comments for the testifiers. Seeing none, thank you. Representative Morrow.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I was just trying to make sure I understood where in the process I was trying to respect your guidelines.
It's our turn to talk to them now. So,
thank you, Mr. Nobles. Thank you both for bringing this this report. And I know it's outside, Mr. Nobles, you mentioned things being outside the purview, but I know we also have a number of new members on the committee. Could you just explain the role of MnDOT when it comes to transit and where MnDOT and the entities within your report either interact or don't interact?
Maybe we'll both answer that, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, and members. Well, we met with MnDOT at the beginning of this evaluation to try and better understand their role. And frankly, they didn't end up playing a very large part because we just didn't think they had a big impact on what we were evaluating. But they do have a much bigger impact out in other parts of the state in the distribution of transit funds. So Ms. Randall might want to add some to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow. I guess where I would add is that the Met Council works with them quite closely, is my understanding, in terms of planning for the transportation policy plan and things that overlap, you know, regarding high-speed rail. So they have a close working relationship. But in terms of being the transit planner for the region, that really falls to Met Council.
Mr. Chairman, I would just add, though, it was a bit of a surprise to me that there wasn't and didn't seem to be more of a role, just because I think we've all, certainly those of us who live in the metropolitan area, certainly see a greater integration of the bus system onto the freeway system, for sure, for good or ill, I guess, depending on your point of view. And so we certainly thought there would be an important role for a lot of communication and planning, and there is some, but there may well be opportunities for even more. But we, again, just didn't bring them in because, at least for now, their focus seemed to be much more on rail transportation than on what we were evaluating.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both. I guess my observation would be, as we're talking about governance of transit in the Twin Cities region, there may be an underlying assumption that we should keep the bifurcation between what we're calling the Twin Cities region today and Greater Minnesota when it comes to transit. I, for one, might question whether that bifurcation is the most efficient, most cost-effective way to proceed. But I do recognize the limitations that you talked about in terms of the scope of your study. So I will simply lay out that I would like continued discussion about how MnDOT and the Twins, or Greater Minnesota and Twin Cities transit can be integrated more, both in terms of service and in terms of governance.
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, thanks. If I could just respond. Representative Morrow, I think that there are many who feel that way and who are looking for an integration. And, yeah, that was kind of just outside our scope. But I would say that we view our recommendations as really kind of a sequential process. And what we've laid out here doesn't preclude heading in that direction. I think we think first we need to get the Twin Cities region in a place that's functioning at a higher level, and then I think that next step could be considered. So,
good. Thank you, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know this is probably going to, well, not probably, it will be a freshman question, but I'm sure there are many, at least along this table, that would like to get an answer. I'm looking at your charts and your slides, and I noticed that the 2009 operating costs were $319 million. Then I look at the bottom of the page, and fare recovery was at 31%. So we can assume that 69% of the difference in the operating costs were covered by taxpayers. And since the levy, the regional transit capital levy, is just for capital, can you explain a little bit more for me, at least, in terms of taxpayer subsidies, where those come from?
Ms. Randall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. If I could direct members to pages 21 and 22 in the report, I'm hopeful that that will answer some questions. Page 21 is a pie chart showing the funding sources for operating, and page 22 shows it for capital. So if we start on page 21, it's figure 1.2. You'll see that MVEST, which is the motor vehicle sales tax revenues, they contributed $114.4 million for operating costs in 2009. Passenger fares were 28.3% of the total cost. State appropriations. CTIP here in 2009 was directed to do a one-time allocation towards operating costs, so they wouldn't typically be that high for operating costs. And you can see federal funding and then others, things like interest income and advertising. On page 22, there's capital funding laid out similarly, and I won't read the chart to you, but I will point out some differences. One is that federal funding is a much larger share of capital funds than operating funds. And two, in the capital funds, you see a larger percentage of, which is this local other funds, which tends to be county, like regional railroad authority funding.
Thank you.
Sure. Ms. Randall, you're on the capital transit funding, the regional funds, would that be the a close approximation to what the transit taxing base is on page 22? Would that be a fair assumption?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Regional funds. Yep. $72 million on page 22.
Mm-hmm.
My previous question about the transit taxing district that raises capital, is that about the annual number for that?
Mr. Chair, the regional funds are the regional bonds that are issued, and it's paid back with the RTC. I believe the RTC is about $34 million a year. I'm getting nods in the audience.
Okay.
Yeah. So the regional transit capital levy raises about $34 million a year, and those funds are used to pay back the bonds.
And that would be that payment. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. That's helpful for us to know.
Mr. Chairman, just to
Mr. Noble.
Cement this a little further, if
sure.
you look on the previous page, 21, uh-huh. there's a footnote that defines regional funds, just for your future reference.
Right at the bottom of the page, footnote number 54. Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Representative Leidiger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm looking forward to the responses to this, but my question is, when was our last evaluation report, if there ever was a evaluation report done before? And did you come up with the same kinds of key legislative recommendations at that time?
Ms. Randall or Mr. Nobles?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, our office has not conducted an evaluation focused on the governance of transit previously. We have done some related to transit in 88, but things change a lot in 20 years, so we haven't had similar recommendations before. This is the short answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to reiterate, this particular report was a request from your colleagues of 2 years ago in the program of work that we asked the Legislative Audit Commission to do that isn't in their normal routine scope of work. So, further questions or comments for these? Representative Hausman.
Mine aren't questions because I asked them last Friday. But,
certainly.
But because this is the transportation group, mm-hmm. I thought I would at least make a couple of observations. I totally support their saying the transit taxing district is smaller than the 7 County really doesn't make a lot of sense and needs to be expanded to the 7 County. But I would say we haven't quite finished our work. Because we already know they're going outside of that. We don't have a 7-county metro area anymore. Some people would say we have an 11-county or a 13-county or a 15-county. And, what I've always contended is a 7-county metro area planning agency is probably obsolete. And at a certain point, we have to face that fact and ask questions about that. So we could expand the transit taxing district to the 7 counties, but in a sense it's just a first step because we are already beyond that. And the other, a totally reasonable recommendation, which is that we shouldn't commit capital funds without ensuring operating revenues be identified. My frustration with this as a supporter of transit is we're sort of applying that only to transit. We're targeting only transit for that because I would argue that any time you build anything, any kind of capital expenditure, whether it is the public school system or prisons or buildings on public college campuses or courtrooms or even roads, in any of those cases, we build things without ever knowing how we're going to pay to run them. And of course, that's the challenge that comes up in any general fund budget. How do we fund the courtrooms once they're there? How do we fund those college campus buildings and or prisons? And so, in a sense, we are looking at one part of this without saying that would be a good recommendation, frankly, for us generally.
Thank you for your note. Mr. Nobles.
Not quite yet, Mr.
I wouldn't necessarily wish that on you, Mr. Nobles.
from my observation over the years, neither would I. It's too hard a job you have on that side of the table. Just to Representative Hausman's point about expanding the metropolitan area to the further than the current seven counties, you know, there are a lot of issues that come up in this report or in this issue that you could debate and talk about even beyond the report itself, and that is certainly one. But I think even the issue of just extending the taxing authority into the full seven counties is predicated on achieving a more accountable metropolitan council. I think we didn't make a recommendation about extending this the metropolitan area beyond the seven counties, but we did, as you just heard, on extending the taxing district. That alone, I'm sure you will soon hear, is going to be extremely controversial and difficult to do. Mm-hmm. Again, because of a variety of factors, service, but I think, again, the accountability or lack thereof that some people feel the current structure of the Metropolitan Council has. So to just kind of bring this all together, what we see is a really necessary first step to then maybe move to some other issues. But I don't think you're ever going to get to those other issues of extending the taxing authority beyond its current range, extending the metropolitan area beyond its current seven counties, until you fundamentally deal with what is perceived to be, particularly among elected officials that are impacted by the council's decisions, its lack of accountability and, in their view, lack of credibility. So, again, there are many other issues to debate here, but I think the one we put before you is at the root of all of them, and that is the nature of the council itself, its accountability and credibility. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. And just a process thing for the freshmen at the table, too. Representative Hausman just illustrated a good point. Not every comment that you need to make here has to be actually a question to the testifiers. If you have an observation or so, please share it with the committee. That's part of why we're around this table. And I'd love to engage the discussion about the legitimate and proper constitutional use of government vis-a-vis courtrooms and schools and roads and bridges, which are actually in the Constitution, versus parks or transit or any one of a number of other things that aren't necessarily in the Constitution. But nonetheless, the principle underlying your comment is well taken, that before we build it, we should probably know how our kids are going to pay for it. That's probably just a prudent thing to do. So thank you for your comments. Further questions or comments for these testifiers or at large before we move on to our next set of testifiers who want to react to the recommendations? Representative Leidiger.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question.
Certainly.
Are they going to come back after the responses? Will these testifiers come back then and respond again? Or
Representative, they will be available to us, yeah. They generally will stay in the room and for further response afterwards. But at this time, it'll be good to hear from some of the folks mentioned in the report. And so we'd like to welcome to the chair, Ms. Susan Haig, the new chair of the Metropolitan Council. Ms. Haig, welcome. Chairwoman Haig, welcome to the committee. And you're bringing reinforcements with you. I see Mr. Shetland's coming. That's a good thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to respond to the Office of Legislative Auditor report. I'm Sue Haig, and I am the chair of the Metropolitan Council. And first of all, I wanted to thank the Office of Legislative Auditor for a very professional job. They spent a lot of time with our staff, also spent a lot of time with the staff of the counties, and we appreciate their conscientiousness in this process.
Ms. Haig, just for the members, there is actually a written response from the Metropolitan Council in the back of your book, starting on where page 127 would be. If you wish. Otherwise, you have no other prepared remarks stuff to hand out, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Right.
Well, please proceed. Sorry for the interruption.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, we agree with many of the recommendations in the report, and there are some that we do not agree with, and they are really set forth in that letter that is in the back of our appendix. I wanted to add just a couple of other comments to that letter. First of all, we were pleased that the report highlights the excellence of the council's transit system in efficiency and effectiveness and in its impact for the riders. And I think that's a very important point as we consider the governance changes that are proposed before us. I would also say that sometimes the challenges that we have with the governance structure here at the Met Council really grew out of a fundamental disagreement about the pacing, the timing, the scope of investment in transit and transportation. And so sometimes the legislature, other elected bodies, found ways around those disagreements and created structures to accommodate those disagreements. And I think that's part of the spider web that you see here. I am a former local elected official. I was a county commissioner in Ramsey County, and I served on the Ramsey County Board. I served on the Ramsey County Rail Authority. I served on the Transportation Advisory Board as a county commissioner. And I really value the input that local elected officials bring to the allocation of resource decisions and to the decisions about how expenditures are made in the transit and transportation area. So I think that does merit further discussion in the governance process. I think the challenge when you run a regional organization is to always balance the regional goals with the very local needs within the system. And the governance structure, to be very effective and to work in its very best, has to accommodate both that regional perspective and the local perspective. Some of the spider web that was highlighted in your report really were structures that were created to make sure that local perspectives were provided at the beginning of the planning process for transitway corridors. And that is valuable, to have that perspective. So sometimes complexity provides the type of local input that you need in the process. The next comment I'd like to make is that as we approach the issue of the structure for the council, that is certainly something that will require the legislature, the governor, the city council members, the county commissioners, and other key stakeholders, including transit users. And we look forward to working with you in that process. It is also important that as we think about the governance for the council, that we're also thinking about the other functions of the council that really are not within the purview of transit and transportation planning. Those have to do with the wastewater treatment system, the regional parks and open space system, the long-range planning, the community development work around the Livable Communities Act. So we want to make sure that a governance structure change also serves those functions well. And that, to me, is something important for us to consider in the process. I would say that one area of disagreement that we have with the findings is the level of disagreement on priorities. The County's Transit Improvement Board is a relatively new organization, about 3 years in the making. The Met Council and the County's Transit Improvement Board, I think, actually have developed a fairly cooperative relationship in identifying the very large areas of investment for transitways in the region. We have also worked successfully with a variety of local governments in this region in many different ways. The Met Council has recently been awarded a significant grant, one of two regions in the country, from HUD because of our cooperation and our ability to work across local government lines. And we have also received a Living Cities grant that will allow us to better target the economic development impacts from transit and transitway investment. And finally, we received a federal transportation planning grant and worked successfully to develop the busway corridor in the I-35W corridor. And I think that speaks to the question that was raised about the relationship between the Met Council and the Department of Transportation in our planning for transitways. We actually work very closely with them, or we would not be able to achieve the results we have. And finally, I would say that in the report, the references to the tension between the council and the suburban transit providers has much to do with the fact that the council has some oversight responsibility for the expenditure resources, by the suburban transit providers as fiscal agent for some of those federal funds. And some of that tension is probably the natural process of making sure that we all understand what those resources are spent for. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would just like to say that we look forward to working with this committee and with other committees of the legislature in finding the right solution for transit governance for the Metropolitan Council and ensuring that we are also achieving the other governance goals for the other council functions. And I brought Judge Shetnan with me to be able to answer your specific detailed questions.
Thank you, Chair Haig. Members, before I ask Mr. Shetnan to give us the brief historical overview of the Transit Taxing District, any questions or comments on the remarks so far? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I guess one of the findings in this report that I don't think has gotten maybe enough attention is how well the council performs on efficiency measures and service use measures. And I thought, you know, it's probably a long answer, but what are you doing well that some of our peer regions aren't? I mean, and just very briefly, how do you account for the Met Council's success in these areas?
Chair Haig?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, I wish I had been at the council long enough to be able to answer that question in detail. I guess I would say that there's been a great deal of attention to planning, to efficient use of resources, and I would certainly invite Arlene McCarthy up here from our transportation planning organization to be able to answer that in more specificity.
Mr. Shetnan.
Madam Chair, yeah. Mr. Chair, I'd like to comment on that real briefly. I think
certainly.
One of the things that the council has done very well, and it goes back to our relationship with the folks from MnDOT and our friends at the legislature and with the cities along the Cedar Avenue corridor and the 35W corridor is the work that we did on the Urban Partnership Agreement. It was a federally competitive process that the council secured $133 million that we were one of five regions in the entire country that received these dollars, and we've been able to make vast improvements on transit and highway improvements on the 35W corridor and major transit improvements on the Cedar Avenue corridor, and that hasn't been done by the council alone. It has been work with our suburban transit providers, with work from the counties, from the cities, and with MnDOT. And all of this happened because we worked together with the legislature in order to get that language that we needed passed. And you know, the council has done a great job, but we haven't done it by ourselves.
Thank you, Ms. McCarthy. Do you feel the need to respond further to Representative Hornstein's question, Representative Hornstein? You're
I think it's just. I got part of it is I want thank you, Mr. Chair, just to point out that, you know, those two slides I think are important, and you know, I agree, and we'll get into later, I think, the governance recommendation, which I do strongly agree with, but I think it's important to highlight that, you know, we're doing pretty well compared to other regions in terms of efficiency, and I think that's it's a credit to your work, and I hope it can continue.
Okay, thank you for making the point, members. I should point out that at Wednesday's meeting, we are going to have a presentation about the UPA on 35W and about the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit, which is still under development, and we'll be chatting about that at that time. So please come back Wednesday for that. Further questions or comments to these witnesses? Mr. Shetnan, talk about transit taxing, whatever we call it now.
Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And turning to the map on page 66, the question was asked to give a little brief history on the transportation taxing district, or the regional transit capital levy. And prior to 2001, transit operations were done through a property tax levy. And in 2001, the Minnesota legislature converted transit operations off of property tax and onto the motor vehicle sales tax. And at that time, then the taxing district still existed, and it was left there by the legislature. However, at the same time, on those areas that you see in the shaded gray areas, they were contributing a small portion of their property tax to regional transit capital. When that conversion was made, that portion that they were contributing to the taxing district was dropped. And so since 2001, those areas in the gray have not contributed to the taxing district or to the small regional transit capital that we use to replace buses, to build park and rides for bus shelters, small repairs, anything that does not meet the requirements for general obligation bonding. So there, but the council has, as was mentioned earlier by Ms. Randall, has continued to offer dial-a-ride. There has been some ADA service out in those areas that was there prior to 2001, and the council has continued to fund that. So those areas outside of the taxing district have received some benefit by not being in the taxing district, where they haven't had to contribute to that since 2001.
And Mr. Shetland, the number collected from this was on, that's the regional funding that was the footnote on the bottom of what page again?
21, Mr. Shetland.
21, there we go.
22.
Yeah, page, 22. It'd be page 22, Mr. Chair.
22, the regional funds indicated here is $72 million, but you might understand that's what's collected roughly from the unshaded areas here in the district. Or is that the bond payments every year?
Mr. Chair, our records show that it's the what we contribute $42 million for the bond payments, and so we would need to get back to you with what that difference is. I'm not sure what that is right now.
But one of you will be back on Wednesday.
Yep.
Perhaps share it with us then. That'd be sufficient.
And Mr. Chair and members, I actually won't be back on Wednesday. I have to do the overview that we provided your committee last week in the Senate, so I will make sure that we have someone here who can follow up with you. And there were also a number of questions from our committee hearing that we are working on, and we'll provide those to your committee.
Appreciate it.
By Wednesday.
Okay. The next testifiers are from CTIB, Mr. Peter McLaughlin. Chair Haig, Mr. Shetland, thank you for your testimony. And Commissioner McLaughlin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you also have a comment notes in the back of the book, right following members. It's in the appendix following the Met Council's comments. The CTIB has a response in writing as well.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Yep.
As I commented to you at the MnDOT cafeteria at lunch, I've been admiring the tie all day.
Well, thank you, Mr. McLaughlin.
Mr. Chairman and members, I've got a variety of comments to make here today. I think first and foremost, I want to emphasize what the auditor's report found. And we worked, we had our opportunities to work with the auditor's staff in presenting our point of view, and we appreciate that opportunity. And we appreciate the audit commission's putting this issue on the agenda. I think it's an important one for the region, as do the members of CTIP. I think we need to go back to that the transit system is performing well compared to our peers, and while there may not be agreement on what the discrete list of measures would be, there are multiple measures that they looked at for efficiency and the like, and we were in the top view in each and every one of them. So to the degree that there are maybe differences in what we ought to be measuring, we covered the gamut here in terms of high performance with this transit system. That's a testimony to Metro Transit, the suburban opt-outs, and the others who've contributed to creating and operating that system on a year-to-year basis. Secondly, we do support the report's recommendation that the council should look at including local elected officials in its membership. We think that's a good step forward, and it moves beyond the traditional notion that the way the Met Council would work best is being removed, one step removed from the helter-skelter and from the day-to-day politics, and in fact that the region could benefit by having the voices of local elected officials there, both in terms of knowledge but also in terms of being able to move an agenda, a vision forward, and actually getting it implemented.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to comment that we think that the notions of inefficiency in the governance structure are a bit overstated, particularly as they relate to conflict over the priorities for transit within the region. We think that those disagreements are overstated in the report. Finally, we think that it's important to state that the statute directed the county's Transit Improvement Board to do some things, and we think that we've succeeded in meeting that statutory directive. So let me just provide a few detailed comments on those, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
One, the statute did direct the formation of a Joint Powers Board to expand the transit system in a way that would bring state or federal funding into this region. We've done so in a very short time period. In less than 3 years, we have done that. We've invested over $300 million in the region's transit priorities, and we are on the verge of a full funding grant agreement for Central Corridor, which will bring almost $500 million in federal funds that would otherwise go to other regions around the country. Without the CTIB investment of 30% of the total cost of that project, there would be no Central Corridor. So we think we've done that, followed the direction of the statute very well. The second is that in terms of the amount of meetings and coordination that's necessary, I think it's important to note here, we're responsible for, we voted as county boards, five different county boards, we voted to impose a tax, and we're responsible for the stewardship, good stewardship of those taxpayers' dollars. We think we've been doing that, and we've been creating the relationship with the Met Council from the ground up, blank pieces of paper. And so there's been understandably some discussions and meetings that have had to take place that had to do with who's liable if there's a construction problem. Mm-hmm. We, you know, the position we've generally taken was CTIB is not responsible for those construction issues. We're a grantor, we're a funder. We fund Met Council. Met Council's the owner, the operator, the contractor, and they should be responsible. We had a couple meetings about that, and the lawyers did meet about that. We did work that through, but we were creating this relationship from the ground up. And so I think the amount of coordination that's going to be required is probably going to diminish over time, because we're going to have some set pieces that we can just bring into play and that we've negotiated out. But we think, as stewards of this resource that the taxpayers have provided, that we needed to be guarding those taxpayers' money and making sure that it was being used in the way that state statute intended. Secondly, Mr. Chairman, these differences in the visions for the region's transit system, we do firmly believe that those are a bit overstated in this report. There are no major differences between the council and CTIB on Central Corridor as the next LRT line. There were no differences on Cedar and 35W as the priority BRT lines. And North Star as the first commuter rail line, and Southwest as the third LRT line. That's been adopted by the Met Council. We've funded all of those. If you look at the Met Council's map, they had red lines on the map for the major transit ways, seven of them. We've provided funding for six of those. Six of those seven priority lines that the Met Council identified. And then the seventh one is 394, which was done about a decade ago, or more than a decade ago. So we think our priorities have, in fact, meshed. There is a difference in the maps that we use, in part on the lines that are further out into the future. Their plan is a 2030 plan. There are some differences about what ought to happen, but it's really about the foggy future. And we're not able to invest willy-nilly in transit lines in this region. We have to have, one, our major investments have to be consistent with the Met Council's plan. Secondly, the federal government, to the extent that these are new starts projects, and that's primarily what we've been investing in, the new start projects, the federal government has a list of criteria. In fact, those were the criteria that Governor Pawlenty relied upon when he decided to support the North Star Corridor. Objective criteria about cost, about return on investment, and the like. Those things are there. And so there shouldn't be any notion here that there's sort of willy-nilly investment without any real sense of prioritization. And if you think about the region, you can argue, and this predated CTIB, but let's just, it's an argument that's been around. Hiawatha wasn't that number one priority in the region. People would argue it should have been Central, or it should have been maybe 35W. But in fact, I don't think anyone would argue that if you were going to build out a transit system, a rail transit system, for the year 2030, you would have
yes, a connection between Minneapolis and St. Paul, yes, a major investment in the 35W corridor, but you'd also have a connection to the airport and the Mall of America as major generators of trips. And so the investment in Hiawatha, though it might not have been number one on the list, it was number three or four, and it was one that we could invest in at the time because there was an existing environmental impact statement, there was right-of-way that was acquired, and it was essentially ready to go. And so, again, I think that the notion that somehow this is going forward willy-nilly is really pretty off base. Beyond that, the argument that we have a narrower vision for transitways than the Met Council, we don't have as many lines on our map. There are BRT lines such as we have in 35W where you have a lane that's there for high occupancy vehicles and buses. There are special stations, special buses, and the like. We have listed those kinds of bus rapid transit in our priorities for funding. We have said we don't have enough resources to fund arterial busways. These would be buses on existing city streets. If you think about a Central Avenue or a Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis, maybe Snelling Avenue in St. Paul, for example. We don't have, County's Transit Improvement Board does not have the resources to be capitalizing those resources as well. So we've said that should be the province of the Metropolitan Council. That's a difference, but it's not a difference of vision. It's a difference of how do we allocate the limited resources that our county boards have made available for investment in transit. So I think that's an important thing to note here, that they're really, in terms of the vision for the region, we have been going in lockstep for all intents and purposes, and we've been very successful in helping to build it out. In terms of operating costs, and I know this has been an issue, a concern, mm-hmm. Are we investing in corridors without accounting for the operating costs? The County's Transit Improvement Board has a spreadsheet, and we look at the investments that we've made and the investments that we would make into the future, and we book into that spreadsheet paying for 50% of the operating costs of all the transitways in which we invest. We do that now for Hiawatha, for North Star, for 35W, and for Cedar Avenue Busways. It totals about $14 million presently. The application that went into the Federal Transit Administration included a commitment from CTIB to fund half of the operating costs of Central Core. And so we have taken it into account. In our accounting, in our looking at resources, how much money are we going to have to spend on capital? How much do we have available? We have taken into account our 50% share of the operating costs. Met Council is responsible for the other half, but we have paid very close attention to that, and we think it's important because the operating costs are very important to make sure that we keep the integrity of the entire transit system. And finally, we do agree with the notion that local elected officials should be appointed to be members of the Metropolitan Council. We think it moves the debate forward. It's going to be a better, more effective Met Council. We do raise some questions about representation. We think that city people should be on there. I mean, cities and counties. But I think we also think that there's got to be some looking at fairness here and equity in terms of one person, one vote, and even the constitutional requirements of that. And so the allocation of those votes, I think, needs to be looked at carefully. So I think some work needs to be done in the future. Finally, I just comment on MnDOT's role. That was a question that was raised. Okay. If you think about some of the transitways here in this region, 35W was a joint project that included buses and transit investment. Cedar Avenue Busway the same. 394 in the past has included that. Frankly, Hiawatha, that the idea there was to skinny up the road and provide the rail as a complement to it as well. And I think there's a great future. If you look at some of those lines, the other lines that need to be built out into the future to 2030, we're going to need BRT, bus rapid transit, that works with the highway department, with MnDOT, in the future. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for questions. We're ready to work with this committee and the other committees of the legislature as we go forward. Thank you.
I have just one question concerning the transitway vision for the future, Mr. Commissioner. The Southwest line still, on page 78, indicates that it's still under development. When I'm getting emails and questions from people in the Kenwood area and so on, would I want to refer them to the CTEB board, or would I want to refer them to Met Council for discussion about the concerns they have?
Mr. Chairman, that's a great question. I would say the referral about those kinds of alignment and mitigation questions should go to Metropolitan Council, but also to the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority. Commissioner Dorfman has been the lead commissioner. Commissioner Callison is involved as well. We're working jointly with Met Council on the development. CTIB is, as I said before, we're a funder.
Okay.
We're one step back from that level of detail, but the Met Council and Hennepin County Rail Authority.
I won't get into a question on Hennepin County Rail Authority right now, but I think thank you for the answer. That helps. And on Central Corridor, are we under construction on that project yet, or is that still under development as well? I know you mentioned the refunding was about to be, the deal was about to be closed with the feds. Did I understand you correctly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There is a document called a full funding grant agreement that constitutes contractual obligation from the federal government to pay for, in this instance, half of the capital costs to build the line. We are within a couple months, by all best estimates, of having that full funding grant agreement in hand. Prior to that, however, the federal government permits projects that are moving along.
Okay.
It will issue what they call a letter of no prejudice. And under a letter of no prejudice, some construction can take place, and it has to be all paid for by the non-federal funding sources. In this case, it'd be the Met Council, CTIB, and the County Rail Authority.
Okay.
And those three entities, those local and state entities, would be at risk if no full funding grant agreement were to materialize. And you proceed on a letter under a letter of no prejudice in order to keep a project on time, on budget, and on schedule for opening. And so that has happened. There was construction in and around the University of Minnesota, and the Met Council people can give you the exact numbers on that. Mm-hmm. There was also construction in downtown Minneapolis to do utility work, so that when the full-blown construction work on the rail line begins this spring, that the utility work would be done and out of the way. And so that has happened, and it's a fairly standard to do that. It happened on North Star as well. But it essentially says, in the event you get a full funding grant agreement, you'll get credit for the expenditures that you're making on these particular things at this point prior to getting your full funding grant.
Good. Thank you for the detailed explanation. Members, Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you and Representative Hausman mentioned, a number of us heard this testimony, or not Commissioner McLaughlin specifically, but the report on Friday. And I welcome, Mr. Chair, some of your comments about your concerns about some of the issues raised in this report, and especially the key recommendation, the number one recommendation: the legislature should restructure the Metropolitan Council. Now, Commissioner McLaughlin, you've been in this body. I think you've even sat on this committee at one time, and you've served many years on the Hennepin County Board, have been on the ground floor of a lot of these initiatives, and very familiar with the Met Council. What are your thoughts about how we move from point A to point B in terms of, not dawdling, but really taking this report seriously and moving to, forward, perhaps hopefully on a bipartisan basis to implement the key recommendation here, restructuring the Metropolitan Council governance? What are your thoughts about that?
Commissioner McLaughlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hornstein. I think that we are well advised to take Chair Hague's advice, that we need to make sure that we think about not only transit, but the other things, like the treatment of the sewage and the comprehensive planning work into account as we think about this restructure. Clearly, there are municipal and other local governmental interests that come into play directly. And so we need to think about how we balance that participation by local elected officials with the broader regional efforts. And I think we can work that through. I think we need to get a group of people together. There needs to be some discussion about how we structure, a very detailed discussion of how we go forward with representation, who does the selecting, and then to the extent that there are conflicts arise between, for example, a local land use plan and the region's comprehensive plan, there needs to be some procedures, it seems to me, or at least some direction to establish procedures to work out those potential conflicts. But I think this is going to take some serious work here. People are going to need a group of committed people who can work out these details, because it is important. I think I'm glad to see that transit was maybe the impetus for this discussion. The council's been in place now for 40 years.
40-something.
Not a bad time to start thinking about maybe how there could be some adjustment to more reflect the collaborative nature of how we move forward in this region. There's collaboration on virtually every project, and so maybe some collaboration at the top at the Met Council would get us to better decisions and make it easier to move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Warren, Representative Hornstein. Further questions or comments before we hear from Suburban Transit Authority? Mr. Commissioner, we'll look forward to engaging you in this further. I assure you, members, there is no bill in the hopper. We won't be solving this at the next meeting. This is a serious and very large topic.
Thank you,
Mr. Commissioner. Suburban Transit Authority, Mr. Mayor, are you? Yeah, here you are. And anyone else you'd like to bring with you? Mayor Furlong, welcome to the Transportation Committee. There are people listening on the internet, and it's being recorded. If you'd identify yourself for the tape, that'd be great.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tom Furlong. I'm the mayor of the city of Chanhassen, and also I'm representing the Suburban Transit Association here today. I've served as current chair of Southwest Transit Commission, which is one of the suburban transit providers as well. First of all, I'd like to thank the chair and members of the commission for giving us the opportunity to come here today and provide some comments and observations with regard to the legislative auditor's report. I'd also like to start by thanking Auditor Nobles and his staff, Ms. Randall, Ms. Bennett, and Ms. Stepke-Benditis for their effort. We really appreciated their extensive work and the inclusive process by which they conducted their efforts during this audit. I would also mention that there is a comment letter in the legislative auditor's report, and I'd like to take some time just to explain a little bit more about the suburban transit providers, who we are, and a little bit how we came to be, and then provide some summary comments with regard to that letter as well. As is mentioned in the report, the suburban transit providers, or the opt-outs as we're also referred to, really came about through legislation in 1981. When the legislature recognized that there were a number of suburban communities that were being underserved with regard to their transit needs. These cities were given an opportunity to opt out from receiving regional transit services and instead establish their own services using the property tax dollars generated in their cities to fund these services. These agencies were formed not only because of the inequities perceived from the taxes being paid into the system versus the services received, but really formed to address the actual needs of the constituents of the riders in the area. Over the years, the ridership in the various cities has increased. Our members, as the report refers to, includes six providers representing 12 cities. Minnesota Valley Transit Association, which represents the cities, or is a joint powers agreement among the cities of Apple Valley, Burnsville, Eagan, Rosemont, and Savage. Southwest Transit Commission, which represents the cities of Eden Prairie, Chanhassen, Chaska, and then the cities of Maple Grove Transit, Plymouth Metrolink, Prior Lake Transit, and Shakopee Transit, who are established as part of their city councils and are city specific. Though in the report where it talks about interactions, and was mentioned by Ms. Randall earlier today of some of the different city transit services working together, one thing to emphasize too is while their organizational structure may be separate, there are some operational work that is done currently where they do work together. For example, the cities of Shakopee and Prior Lake operate the Blue Line service collectively, and so operationally they are working together. But we've seen ridership grow among our various cities. Currently, we serve about 5 million riders on an annual basis. among the 12 cities. And we also recognize our role is part of an overall regional transit system, not only from transit standpoint, but also the transportation system as well. The Office of Legislators report, as was mentioned earlier by others, represents and recognizes the positive outcomes of the Twin Cities regional transit system. It's important to recognize that there are a number of success stories associated with our transit system, and the report confirmed that our region's transit system performs very well on measures of efficiency and effectiveness relative to other peer regional systems. The report also recognizes that transit operations are well coordinated among the regional providers, resulting in seamless, high-quality services to our transit users. Transit riders are pleased with the services that they receive from all the providers, and ridership has increased throughout the region. We believe that the efficiency and effectiveness of our regional bus system is a result in part of the competitive nature among the multiple providers that has provided valuable innovations and other regional transportation benefits to all parties. We do acknowledge that the administration of transit governance in the region is complex. That is a common characteristic among most regional transit systems, including those peer regional systems that the Legislative Auditor Group considers. But while it's complex, the region has benefited from the expanded services, reduced congestion, regional innovations as a result of the suburban providers' presence and initiatives. We also believe that the relationship between the suburban providers and the Metropolitan Council has been strained in large part due to the scarcity of financial resources, which has hampered planning efforts among all the providers. We believe that there's been a lack of consensus over the regional allocation of funding, not only among the region's bus transportation providers, but also between and among the different modes of transit, that has exacerbated and highlighted these conflicts. I will say that as a member organization, we have not taken a position on the form of Metropolitan Council governance, although some of our member cities may and probably will do that in due course. But we do recognize the opportunities for governance consolidation presented in the report as a potential benefit to the region as a whole. We do appreciate the report's recognition as well of the important role that the suburban transit providers play within the regional transit system. The specific recommendation that the suburban providers continue to be in operation is clearly one that we support. The suburban providers have and the ability to stay close to the needs of our riders and our communities. This is a point that was emphasized by the report and one that we believe has really helped increase ridership in areas that was, again, previously underserved. It's brought the innovative transit solutions to the region from our suburban providers that has reduced congestion on the regional system and roadway system. And that benefit, that reduced congestion, is not only a benefit to those residents that live in our cities, but it really is a benefit to the region as a whole and anyone traveling on a regional highway. We will continue to look for areas to improve efficiency and effectiveness in our operations, both singly as well as between and among the various suburban providers and Metro Transit. Again, as the report emphasized, the operational relationship between Metro Transit and suburban providers does work well and provides good service, and we will continue to look for ways to improve upon that.
Mr. Mayor.
Sir.
I need to apologize that my clock management skills are almost as bad as the Vikings. And we've got excuse me. Did I say that out loud? Anyhow, I've got two more testifiers would like to comment, to be serious. If you could kind of summarize the last couple, 3 points you want to make here, because I would like to get our friends from Transit for Livable and for Metro Cities wanted to respond to it. I'm sorry, I should have been moving this along a little more crisply, but if you could, Tom, I'd appreciate it.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Real quickly, we do agree, and it's been mentioned before, of the need to avoid committing capital funds to transitways without insured operating revenues. That's been discussed, and we agree with that, in large part because of the scarcity of existing resources and the likelihood that it will become more scarce in the future. We also have concerns about the recommendation with regard to the allocation of supplemental MBEST dollars, but we would like to see if the Metropolitan Council is given that distinctive authority that the governance recommendations or changes in government recommendations be implemented in order to improve the accountability and transparency of the process. With that, while we do have some other concerns and they aren't expressed in our letter, I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions now or going forward as an organization and our individual members. We'd be happy to work with this committee and others as you look at this important issue for our region.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate that. Questions or comments on the Suburban Transit Authority's remarks? I'm glad you guys, it was good to see you this morning at your meeting, and I'm glad you came back today for this.
Thank you.
Thank you. If I could ask Mr. Van Hattem, are you here? From Transit for Livable Communities. And do you mind if I have Todd Olson come to down with you? You guys generally pretty friendly to each other? All right. Mr. Olson, come on over. And if I could have Mr. Van Hattem do his remarks. Again, I'm sorry I've given you 10 whole minutes here, but please tell us your thoughts on the report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dave Van Hattem. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We recently finished a report somewhat on a similar topic, a little broader, looking at planning for transportation and land use in the Twin Cities. And I just wanted to let you know that that's available. I have copies here, and we'll get it to the committee members.
Thank you. Please, yes.
I think my comments can be quite brief this afternoon, covering much of what you've heard already. But maybe with a couple of different perspectives. First of all, we also applaud the legislative auditor's report, find it to be an excellent resource on transit in the Twin Cities. Before getting to the governance question, though, we think it's critical to think about why we invest in transit and what our region's performance is. We invest in transit to save families and businesses money and to get people to work. The Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials reports that every dollar invested in transit results in over $6 of economic return. That's things like reduced delay, reduced costs for operating vehicles, reduced emissions, and improved safety. Transit also gets people to jobs. Nearly two-thirds of transit riders are going to work. The unmistakable conclusion of the legislative auditor's report is that the Twin Cities has a highly, highly effective transit system. I think you've heard that from all of the commenters this afternoon. Of course, some tension, distrust, and complexity in governance structure, but excellent results is far better than the opposite. Simple, unremarkable governance, but poor results. We agree with the report's conclusion that even after major increases in transit ridership, there remains a very high level of pent-up demand for transit in the Twin Cities. We also agree with the recommendation to streamline governance at the Met Council by including some elected officials. We would like to see a majority of elected officials and eliminating the Transportation Advisory Board. We do have a couple of critiques of the report. First, the idea that there are not a clear set of priorities for transit is vastly overstated. The priority for transit, as the legislature has articulated for years, is high ridership per dollar invested. And by the measures in the report, I believe we're third among our 12 peers. No doubt there are tensions between providing transit for those without cars versus attracting new riders. It's a question of getting people without cars to jobs, to education, to other needs, versus getting people out of cars to reduce congestion. But we would argue that this is really no different than similar trade-offs regarding road investments or any public investment. And if you don't believe me, I encourage you to ask the MnDOT folks or to attend a Transportation Advisory Board. You'll see a very similar process of tension, probably creative and useful tension, regarding what should be the priorities. Second, we believe it is problematic that the impact of local land use decisions on transit effectiveness is not included, or at least not delved into in the auditor's report. We believe that land use in the form of compact work centers, walkable neighborhoods, will provide a far greater impact on transit performance than any variation in governance structure. In fact, all of the five peer regions with higher ridership per capita than the Twin Cities that are referenced in the report are also more densely populated than the Twin Cities. Planning for more density is about preparing for the new economy and changing market preferences. The Wall Street Journal recently reported that Gen Yers, the largest demographic of home buyers, don't want dependence on a car and do desire walkable neighborhoods with transit service. Yet local zoning often limits the provision of more compact mixed-use housing development, and far too much of our region does not currently have convenient transit options. To conclude, public transit is a smart investment for Minnesota, and the Twin Cities region is very effective at providing that service. Thank you.
Mr. Van Hattem, thank you for being concise to the point. Questions or comments, members, for Mr. Van Hattem? Seeing none, Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Todd Olson. I represent Metro Cities today, and I'll be very quick in response to time today. We have 80 member cities in our organizations. We represent the core cities. We represent opt-outs. We represent cities within the transit taxing district and cities without that are outside of the transit taxing district. So we have a number of perspectives waiting for this report. We had the opportunity to meet with Judy, Emmy, and Julie early last year, and we appreciated that. We've been looking forward to this. Like everyone else, we believe this is a very useful, thorough, and thoughtful report. We're the only regional entity that monitors the Met Council and legislature on behalf of cities in the metro area. And we have a number of policies on the structure of the Met Council, which is one of the recommendations of this report. We do support fixed staggered terms for the interests of stability of the Met Council, but the report also touches on the structure of Met Council only in relation to transit as a function, whereas the Met Council, as Representative Leidiger alluded to in his question, there's been no previous comprehensive study of all the functions of the Met Council. We just want to remind people, as others have said today, that if we are going to look at revisiting the structure of the Met Council, we want to take into consideration everything the council does, not just transit. There's wastewater, there's parks, there's planning, and there's housing. And we must consider and investigate all these functions and how they interact with each other as well before we make any structural changes to the Met Council.
Good. Thank you. Members, concluding remarks, questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And having read this report over the weekend and looked at it, I want to say that it's good that we look at ourselves and what we do and try and improve. It's very Minnesotan the way this looking at it. We've been talking about all the shortcomings here, but I think the first statement here in the summary is that we're doing a pretty good job considering all the complexities and all the problems we face here. So I think we should look at it that way and continue to strive to make this a better product for our citizens and the people that rely on transit.
Thank you for your comments. Questions, comments? Members, Representative Hausman.
Just to the last point, maybe a comment. I agree with Representative Nelson and those who've said, in spite of all this, we have actually done a good job because people figure out how to work together across all of those boundaries. It's even true in the case of parks. The last speaker referenced that. I was asked to attend a planning meeting of the Metropolitan Parks, and just on their own, they realized that their group went outside of those the seven counties, and they had invited that group in at the table. And so there is a sort of a common sense coming together. And that works if everyone has good intentions. But I think it would be behoove us still to say, at a certain point, the governance structure on paper somehow also has to reflect all of that good intention. Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Ms. Randall, do you feel compelled to give any concluding remarks or?
Mr. Chairman, very quickly, thank you for holding this hearing, first of all, and the opportunity to participate. Just a couple of quick comments. You know, the question we pose is the governance structure that we have the one we want going forward in the future? It is certainly true that given the complexity and fragmentation, people have done a wonderful job working through the challenges and difficulties, but we think it has been more difficult, more time-consuming, more stressful than it needs to be, and so some streamlining of the structure we think would be helpful. There are certainly people, and you heard from several of them today, who have very strong and very clear visions for transit. Our point is that we think it's time for the legislature to weigh in, because when push comes to shove and you have to implement people's vision, sometimes there are different priorities. in terms of how to allocate scarce resources. And so we think, since you are the source of a good deal of the money that is involved in being divvied up, you might want to take a shot at saying what you think those priorities and that vision ought to be. Our comment about the role of MnDOT, I think, reflects more that certainly MnDOT has, as you've heard, been very cooperative when approached about how to integrate transit in, but I think there is probably more work to be done for MnDOT to initiate some of that thinking as we go forward. So again, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you very much.
Mr. Nobles, Ms. Randall, thank you for a very thought-provoking and in-depth report. I don't think this is quite what we were expecting when we asked you to do this probably 20 months ago now, but wow. Sometimes we get a product frequently that goes beyond what we were thinking, and that's very Minnesotan of you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. This obviously will be with us. We'll be digesting this for some time, members. On Wednesday at 12:30, we'll be in the basement hearing room directly below this. We're going to hear from the from MnDOT and the Met Council regarding the Urban Partnership Agreement on 35W, Cedar Avenue BRT, and if I can find somebody to explain it to me, we'd like to talk about 394 and how that's been working since I was here when we actually authorized the same lanes out there. So, members, with that, we are adjourned.